Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson, and this week's episode we'll be discussing the NBA as we're coming out of All-Star break. We will also talk about the NFL as they're rearing up for their offseason, and of course we will have our best for last. Now as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news coverage and updates. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die, it's where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. He gon' tell it to you straight,
Welcome into the show. Welcome into the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. I am so excited to be with you on this Wednesday morning again and enter the release show. We don't get too many of these in a year, but I feel like this year we're getting a lot of them. I don't know. I feel like things are working out in our favor. But we're getting another Insta release show. I'm recording this on Wednesday morning, right after 9 o'clock Central Time. And I'm excited to be with you guys. A little bit of personal news from me. I'm going to be a little slow on the news, maybe just a little bit, as I'm going to the Glacier Clinic in Las Vegas, one of the bigger coaching clinics in the country. The Glacier Clinics do a tour. They go around the country. It just happened that it worked out well for me with timing wise. So I'll be at the clinic, the Glacier Clinic, because you guys have been watching, listening to the show and listening for years. Now I'm a defensive coordinator. I'm a coach, football coach. So it is huge to be able to go to this clinic. They're partnering with the Raiders. I'm being sessions wall to wall while I'm there. So the news could be a little slow, but I'll definitely give you guys an update on the clinic whenever I get back and record the next show after the clinic. So that'll be dope. But happy Wednesday to you all. Happy hump day. You've officially made it halfway through the week. So for those of you on the job right now, hey, man, you're halfway through. By the time you hear this, you'll be over halfway through. So kudos to you guys for working it out. But I like to do this show. I try to do it every year. I call it my Welcome to the NBA show. Football season's over. We usually do the instant reaction with the Super Bowl. And then we have All-Star break. Now, usually All-Star break is not... It feels like All-Star break was really close to the Super Bowl this year. Normally, it feels like All-Star is like right around Mardi Gras. It kind of gives like two and a half-ish weeks between Super Bowl and All-Star break. Kind of give fans a chance to, if you're a dual fan, but like myself, you like football more. It kind of gives you an opportunity to say, okay, basketball season, I'm going to watch a couple of games, kind of get familiar with what's going on. And then you go into All-Star. And then kind of that's, you know, to me, there's like Daytona 500 is like the Super Bowl for NASCAR. It's like this, their biggest race at the beginning. But then there's the Indy 500. It's kind of like the official, okay, now we're roaring towards what matters. Sort of what All-Star break is to me. Christmas Day, to me, is the unofficial start of basketball season. Yes, I get it. It starts around Halloween or whatever. To me, Christmas Day is your unofficial start to basketball season. And then All-Star break is the, okay, now let's wake up, let's regroup, let's reevaluate. and then roar towards the playoffs. But we have just came out of All-Star Weekend. Again, even though it felt really soon, we came out of All-Star Weekend. And it was a lot of discourse. And that's what I want to talk about first. And we're going to get into the standings and kind of the outlook on the rest of the season. But I want to get into All-Star Weekend first. There was a lot of discourse, a lot of discontentment about the All-Star game. I'm one of the people who criticized it too. Friday night was cool. The Rising Stars game, I don't mean to sound harsh, but it doesn't matter. So, like, Skip Bayless was tweeting about the celebrity game. Who cares? Right? Like, it's not the year of, like, you know, Kevin Hart playing, so a lot of eyes are on it. Or when Monet Davis played fresh off the Little League World Series, a lot of eyes were on it. You know, a lot of eyes were on the Monet Davis one. Again, Kevin Hart was in that one, too. Justin Bieber was in it. Terrell Owens was flying around, and Usain Bolt was in it. A lot of WNBA stars were in it. And it's early. We had like a U.S. congressman in it one time. That was pretty dope. So again, we've had, you know, pretty amazing celebrity games, but it's a celebrity game, right? And then Friday night. Is these so Thursday night's the celebrity game. Friday night you have this Rising Stars game, rookie versus sophomores, USA versus the world, whatever. But it's the first 2 to 3 years of NBA service you can be in the Rising Stars game, right? And they've done all kinds of stuff. They did, you know, rookie versus sophomores was it forever. And then it went USA versus the world. And then it went to like this, like the weird tournament style thing. Like they've been trying stuff for years to make Rising Stars game exciting. There's not a lot of rookies to get me excited. For instance, the Rising Stars game 1 year had Ja, Luka, Zion, Trey, I think was in it. Like that was a fun one. But like the rookies this year, let's be honest, they're not good. Like Dalton Connect's probably the best one, right? Like they're not very good. And no disrespect to Zachary, he's a share. Alex, I hadn't heard anything about Alex Sarr all season. And, you know, but next year should be fun. You'll have Cooper Flagg in the game. You'll have Ace Bailey. You'll have some of those stars. So you'll have some guys in the game. And another guy will probably be fun too. But you'll have some guys in the game that'll make kind of fun, right? But ultimately, no one cares. Saturday night is what Saturday night is. It's three-point contest, which is always dope. And then the slam dunk, which we'll talk about Mack McClung in a minute. Sunday night is supposed to be the showcase of the Immortals, a la WrestleMania, a la, like I said, Daytona 500 or Indy 500, really. Indy 500 was like it's the Brickyard 500. Like, it is what it is. You go over literally a road of bricks to the finish line. Like, it's the Brickyard 500. You have, you know what I'm saying, the rest, you got WrestleMania. You have with all these things, but whatever it is, it ends. It is the showcase game, in a way, for the NBA. And what happened in this, and it was weird. A few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I was in Wingstop getting some food, and I happened to look up, and they were showing like a 1970 something All Star game. Like Bill Walton was on the floor. Like I just happened to look up and see it. And it was on NBA, the TV happened to be NBA class or whatever, and I was watching it, and I was in Wingstop for a few minutes, so I was watching it, and it looked like a basketball game. Obviously, they weren't hard fouling. If somebody drove past somebody, they weren't really coming over for help side defense, crazily. They were trying to block it, but they weren't, you know, bringing them to the floor, and, you know, if a fast break happened, they might try to stop the pass, tip the pass, but once it got to the rim, they let it go. So it was clearly a relaxed basketball game, but it was basketball. It was mid-range jump shots. I mean, it was 70s and 80s, too, but it was mid-range jump shots, post-ups. It was real at-the-rim defense. People were driving, and people were going trying to block it. Like, it was real. It ended up like a basketball game, and I noted to myself, man, that looks like a basketball game. You know, and just, you know, because last year was like 211 to 186, something like that in the All-Star game. Like, a team scored 186 points and lost by more than 25 points. Like, that's insane, right? But watching that old one, I was like, man, that looks like a basketball game. And so I remember they talked about the All-Star game in the 90s. People were going at each other. A lot of personal beefs were being settled. But people going at each other. I mean, think about the 80s. I mean, it was, you might have three or four Lakers and three or four Celtics on an all-star team. And then Jordan and then, you know, Bad Boy Pistons were involved. And remember, they famously iced Jordan out of the all-star game, wouldn't pass on the ball early in his career. As a lot of people said, set up for what Jordan did later. He kind of kept that chip on his shoulder forever. They iced me out. You get into the 90s, they were usually Jordan Dunk Fest. However, you had people trying to show, hey, this is our chance. Early 2000s, there's the famous Allen Iverson, the famous ending where they were going at each other down the stretch. 2010, 2011, you get Kobe versus LeBron. I mean, remember, at one point they were playing an All-Star game in football stadiums. Like, remember, like, Kevin Durant's first All-Star game was in Jerry World because Dallas was just, Jerry was showing off the stadium any way he could. So they played the All-Star game in Jerry World and had like 60,000 people in the building to watch an All-Star game. And they were pretty much going at it that night. Terrible shooting because it was in the basketball arena. But it was some big time moments. And then you had just the last 6 or 7 years where the All-Star game was a three-point contest and a dunk show. Right? Like, I mean, and then it coupled with Saturday night was bad. So you had bad Saturday night coupled with, you know, people were making jokes. There's better dunks in the game than there are in the same dunk contest. And the dunks in the game were wide open walking dunks. I mean, it was, I remember it might have been last year, the year before that, Steph and Dame start going half court shot for half court shot. And one or two are fine. Like, it's Steph and Dame, right? Like, at a certain point, I can't help myself, I'm going to shoot it. Like Steph did last night or a few nights ago. You know, they were up 8 or whatever, and he just said, screw it, and shot a bomb, and it went in. And plus, he was in San Francisco. He was in the Bay. So you got to a point where it was literally like for like 3 or 4 minutes, three players on either side kind of walked up and down the court, and it was just horrible. Horrible basketball, right? And so the NBA tried this new thing this year where they basically made it how Rising Stars had a tournament. The pros had a tournament. So they drafted 12 players on each side. As an honor to TNT, Shaq, Kenny, and Chuck picked their squads. Shaq went with the OGs. Kenny ended up with the international players. And then Chuck ended up with the young stars, the rising stars, basically. Not the rising stars, the new generation. And then the Rising Stars team had a tournament. The Rising Stars teams had a tournament. Little four team, six player tournament, whatever, to go into whoever wins that tournament will play on Sunday night against the OGs, I think, end up drawing them. But the Rising Stars game, Draymond and many others were pissed, especially players. The Rising Stars are not all stars. They have no business playing on Sunday night. And I agree with them. Draymond had one of the better analogies I've ever heard in my life. Draymond was like, they don't deserve to be on the all-star floor. And yes, from the time the Rising Stars game isn't even played in the All-Star Arena, but from the time it is All-Stars Saturday night or Friday night with the Rising Stars game, All-Star Friday night, you're on the All-Star floor. It says All-Star all over the floor. You're in the All-Star Arena. The crowd's there, whatever. But he was somebody similar to Air Force One. He said, there's more than one of those planes, but it's not Air Force One unless the president's on it. That floor is an all-star floor until the all-stars are on it, until the best players in the world are on it. So he was frustrated because he was like, man, you're basically, he was saying like, okay, first of all, the format's stupid, which I agree. You're playing games to 40 in an attempt to make the players play harder because the game is shorter. To me, the issue is not length of game. I think style of game and reward. Style of game and benefit is what could really change this game. For instance, so I think the style of game, I think FIBA style three time quarters, 10 minutes a quarter. It's all star game. You don't need 12. Those who want to play will play. Those who are just going to do a la what LeBron did last year, when he played like 3 minutes, got like 4 points and sat down, are going to do that. Right? And then the Elam score, I think plus 24 forever because of Kobe. He already got the Kobe Bryant MVP award for the All-Star game. Give Kobe Bryant the, you know what I'm saying? Make it 24 points for the All-Star. I like the year where they did the quarter system, where you played for each quarter. you win a quarter for your charity, and then they added the score up at the end, and then you played a regular fourth quarter. You played Elam score for Elam ending or target score fourth quarter. I like that system too. But regardless, three regular quarters, maybe adding something to each quarter, blah, 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 for charity. And then you play a target score fourth quarter and a commercial-free target score fourth quarter. I hated all the gimmicks. The All-Star game lasted 3 hours. 3 hours. Only 33 minutes was actual basketball. The rest was Mr. Beast and trying to get a half-court shot from a fan. And you had Kevin Hart giving retirement gifts to TNT, and you had, I mean, the halftime show is the halftime show, but you had all this different stuff, and it's like, bruh, it was a whole lot of gimmicks, and there was hardly any basketball. That wasn't the All-Star game. That was like a ode to TNT. Basically, it was a miss, a major miss from the NBA. And I ended up tweeting out, I said, while that was fun, I never want to see that on my TV again. Like, it was just a joke. It was ridiculous. It was like everything wrong with the NBA came out at one time. Now, the games were pretty solid. The games are fairly competitive. But the OGs wanted to end the game a certain way. They wanted to hit a three. Because they had, like, multiple layups when they were down, when they were only 3 points away from the target score, that they just passed up for threes. Like, they were trying to end it with a three. They could have ended it anytime they wanted to. They could have blown the Rising Stars out 40-10 if they felt like it. No, you know what I'm saying? Like, they just didn't want to. And it kind of watered down seeing the Rising Stars on Sunday night. I didn't enjoy that at all. You have a Rising Star that earned an All-Star bid? Great, be an All-Star. But just because you're on the Rising Stars team, you happen to win a tournament against other Rising Stars, you play truly the best players in the world on Sunday night? Yeah, I ain't like that, right? And so I think that was a miss. I think traditional, I'm not a fan of the traditional East. I mean, if you're going to do the East-West format, that's fine. I don't like the USA versus the world idea because there's not enough good world players yet. There's not enough good all-star level players from the world yet. 4 years, 5 years, run it. You know what I'm saying? But think about it. There's a lot of bigs on the world team. Victor and Jokic and Cat, Embiid. You know what I'm saying? They're going to have every big. But they're going to have like little to no guards. Like, it'll be a lot of Dylan Brooks real fast. And Bojan Bogdanovic, and then a couple of American players who may have deserved All-Star nods don't get it because of that. So I don't like that idea. So I'm cool with 24 teams. Now I am a fan of 24 teams regardless, 24 players regardless of conference. To me, you don't have to do 12 East, 12 West, and then play. I'm a fan of 24 regardless of conference, or if you're going to do East West, put the finals online. If you don't want to give any money, because the easiest thing to do with motivated players, winning team gets $2 million apiece, losing team gets nothing. That's easy way to motivate a player, right? $2 million? Man. I can make $2 million tonight? I'm about to play. Or you put the finals on the line. These are all-stars. Usually all these guys' teams are at least in the playoffs. Put the finals on the line. Winning conference gets home court advantage in the NBA finals. But you got to do something to motivate these guys to get them to play. Because that crap was not it. I assure you that wasn't fun. If that's the format next year, I will not be watching. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. And a lot of my friends didn't watch this year because of the stupid format. They thought it was stupid, and then you went and made it worse by junking it up with a whole bunch of presentations and stupid contests. Yeah, let's never do that again. But shout out Mac McClung. Man, I would be remiss if I mentioned Mac. The G League dunker extraordinaire. The first three-peat winner ever of the NBA slam dunk contest. He has yet to miss a dunk in the dunk contest in 3 years. He has never missed. And that's what made it so impressive. He has never missed. I think all his dunks but one have been 50s. I mean, what he did Saturday night, jumping over the car with the reverse, jumping over, Evan Mobley. Taking the ball off the top of his head, kissing the rim with the ball, dunk. Having a guy spin on a hovercraft and another guy hold a different ball above the rim, dunking both basketballs. And then the 360 was insane. He jumps over the guy and then straight and then spins his body last second and dunks it. It's freaking ridiculous. Like I said, he's never missed. Stephen Castle, to me, Stephen Castle and Trey Murphy over the last 15 years, probably won every dunk contest but four. Any other Aaron Gordon was there not winning. Even though Aaron Gordon's ever dunk title in his house. Like, to me, he'd be Zach LaVine. I definitely thought he'd be Derrick Jones. To me, Trey Murphy beat Mac McClung the first time. Right? So, but it's insane, man. Mac McClung, he's a little 6 foot one white guy. Like, it's not like he's one of these 6 foot seven, 6 foot eight power dunkers that just dunk the absolute crap out of the ball on a regular basis. He's a superstar. He's a, like I said, 6 foot one white guy that plays in the G League. I saw a stat was like he's made $310,000 for dunk contest winning, and he's made like $290,000 in the NBA or something like that. Now they asked him after the dunk contest, "Yo, you coming back?" He said, "Yeah." He said, "If they want me back bad enough, I'll do it." Translation: pay me. Now, whenever a dunk contest is crazy and the crowd's going insane or whatever, guy starts tweeting, "Oh man, if this happened, I'll do it." John Morant does it. If Matt comes back, I'll do the dunk contest. Giannis goes, "Well, if you come back, I'll do it." That lasted like 24 to 48 hours. And then Giannis is walking back, whacking it. "Yeah, my kids hacked my phone. They tweeted that, blah, 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 blah." Because none of them are going to do it. But think about the dunk contest in its past. Michael Jordan was a birth Air Jordan in the dunk contest. Dominique wasn't he was a high level player, but he wasn't no crazy level player. Spud Webb was a 5 foot six basketball player. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't no dunk. He wasn't no superstar. So you get these guys that, you know, you don't get. Kobe wasn't Kobe yet. You know what I'm saying? So when these guys did these dunk contests, they usually weren't the best players in the world at the time. They grew into it, but they, you know, looking back, I'm like, man, something says like, did the dunk contest. But they were never like Michael Jordan wasn't doing dunk contest 92. That was 85, 86 kind of thing. He wasn't doing it in 92. You know what I'm saying? So it'll be interesting to see if anybody does effectively challenge Mac's throne. I think the NBA needs to pay him $1 million next year or $2 million next year and say, "You're gonna do the dunk contest, son. Here's $2 million. Whether we gotta give it to you under the table, whether they gotta give it to you in an endorsement, whether they gotta give it to you just some random team gives you 2 years, $8 million as a thank you for the dunk contest kind of thing. Like, I don't know what we gotta do, but that's what I would do if I'm the NBA. Mac is dunking next year. And in Los Angeles, Mac is dunking next year. All right, but moving away from All-Star Weekend, we're gonna talk about the rest of the outlook of the NBA season really quickly. So we have, I'm gonna do the standings rundown really quickly. So in the East, we have Cavs, Celtics, Knicks, Pacers, Bucks, Pistons, round out the top six. So if the season were to end, those six teams would have playoff bids automatically. In the play-in for the East, Magic, Hawks, Heat, Bulls. And right outside the play-in, we have Sixers, Nets, and Raptors. To the West, we have Thunder, Grizzlies, Nuggets, Rockets, Lakers, Clippers. So those six teams, again, if the season ended today, would have automatic bids into the playoffs. Then you have Timberwolves, Mavs, Kings, Warriors. Those teams would be in the play-in tournament. And then Suns, Spurs, and Blazers round out those teams that are not quite in the play-in tournament. A lot of storylines left. Luka, LeBron, what do the Mavericks do? Do the Knicks get the 2 seed? Do the Cavs and the Thunder hold their impressive leads? Can the Lakers get to the 2 seed? Can Detroit climb up a little bit higher? Maybe even get to that 4 and have home court advantage in the first round? What happens with the Suns? They're only a game and a half out of the play-in tournament. And who wants to see Kevin Durant one game only? Philadelphia 76ers, can they get it turned around? Paul George, Tyrese Maxey, and Joel Embiid. So there's a lot of storylines happening in the second half of the NBA. But up next, we're going to transition to the NFL really quickly, talk about what's going down there. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to talk about, again, really quickly, NFL free agency, what's going down there. So in NFL free agency, it is typically, it's getting gotten a lot better as of late. They're not necessarily stealing the NBA's model of free agency is everything, but it has gotten a lot better as of late. And then we're going to go through some headlines really quickly in the NBA. So Andy Dalton goes back to Carolina, 2 years, $10 million. All but looks like he'll finish his career as a backup there in Carolina, backing up Bryce Young. And then the Bengals, they look to keep their core of Jamar Chase, Trey Henderson, and T. Higgins. Now, this is going to take some extensive cap maneuvering in order for the Bengals to get this done. However, I think they can do it. Joe Burrow has a very movable contract. What I mean by movable, I mean rearrangeable. You can easily create space in Joe Burrow's contract. That's not a huge problem, not a huge deterrent. Jamar Chase is going to have to be friendly. And not friendly in terms of his dollar value, friendly in terms of his structure. And the ownership, who I've criticized for being cheap, is going to have to, we're going to have to pony up some guaranteed dollars. The reason why is you're going to want to pull as much of Jamar Chase money away from the cap as much as possible. His cap hit has to be really, really low. The reason why is you've got to bring in T. Higgins at a good number, and they want to keep Trey Hendrickson on the defensive side of the ball while also attempting to maintain some flexibility in the free agency. Because if I'm them, if I'm the Bengals, I have a Ronnie Staley clause in all of my players, in all my players' contracts this offseason. Yeah, we're able to convert this crap to as whatever we can do it to get Ronnie Staley. The Cincinnati Bengals are a left tackle away from being the best team in the AFC North. I'm not saying that from conjecture. I'm not saying that from opinion. It's a fact. They have the second best quarterback in the AFC North, I give you. They easily got the best weapons. They have probably the worst coach. But they have such elite talent on the offensive side of the ball. If they can just get marginally better on the O-line and competent on defense, you're looking at the best team in the AFC East. And AFC North, I'm sorry. I believe that much in Burrow and Chase, I believe that much in that offense that they can do it. So if I'm the NFL, I'm keeping the O-line away from Cincinnati. Without an O-line, they made it to the Super Bowl. The only reason they don't have a ring is because, well, Aaron Donald and their O-line. But they are absolutely dangerous, and the Bengals are trying to find a way to keep their core together, but they have to do it, in my opinion, without sacrificing flexibility for agency. Because, again, if a Ronnie Staley or Cam Robinson or someone of that nature pops up in free agency, you have to have the ability to go get those guys. You just have to be able to do that. I would sacrifice Trey Henderson for that. Kellen Moore is the new head coach of the New Orleans Saints officially. He's working on building out his staff. He's got Brandon Staley as all but his defensive coordinator, the former head coach of the Chargers, who's the only NFL head coach I've seen in my life worse than Zach Taylor. And he's got Doug Nussmeier pretty much tabbed as his OC. Now, Doug Nussmeier is the head coach, or is the father of LSU quarterback Garrett Nussmeier. He's been a quarterback coach in the league for years, multiple stops. He's looking like he's going to be the OC for the New Orleans Saints, who are in need of a quarterback, and his son comes out next year's draft in the same state. I'm not saying things were done in advance, but I'm not saying it either. Aaron Rodgers, as we all know, will not be a Jet. So where does Aaron Rodgers go? The world may never know. If he wants to continue the Brett Favre arc, he's in Minnesota next year. However, I don't see that happening. Either the Vikings quarterback will either be J.J. McCarthy or Sam Darnold. So it's going to be a situation where I don't know where Aaron Rodgers lands. I don't know where Aaron Rodgers fits personality-wise. Talent, he can play on a few teams. I just don't know what he fits personality-wise. He's a general, general menace. And the franchise tag expected to be light this year. Like I said, Ronnie Staley and T. Higgins are the two names that jumps out in the franchise tag market. I don't see anybody else doing it, but I'm going to run really quickly through the franchise tag numbers. Defensive tackle, $24.745 million. Linebacker, $25.069 million. Cornerback, $19.833 million. Safety, $18.321 million. Tight end, $13.618 million. Wide receiver, $23.598 million. Offensive lineman, $23.051 million. Running back, $13.437 million. Kicker or punter, $6.218 million. Quarterback, $39.636 million. Defensive end, $21.713 million. And again, that is for the first tag number. The number that jumps out to me, running back. They're the second lowest paid people. It's kickers and punters, then them. Just below tight ends, barely. I mean, if I'm Saquon, I know he's not on a franchise tag. If I'm Saquon, I'm causing hell to get my money. That's just me personally. I'm just causing hell. I ain't gonna lie to you. But up next, we're going to shift to our best for last, which is going to be talk about Unrivaled. Welcome into the show. And now we're going to quickly talk about the Unrivaled League, the 3-on-3 full court women's basketball league featuring a lot of your favorite WNBA players. They did a heck of a job with their 1-on-1 tournament. That was fun. Shout out to Nafisa Courier for winning it. And the league has been fun. It's been a fun league. But what I've enjoyed about them is this league has allowed them flexibility to go tour. Like Asia Wilson just had like a 2-on-2 thing, and like Arike Gumbawale, who's in Unrivaled, like played in the thing. And so did Dejanay Carrington, and Chelsea Gray was also winning. And it's allowed these players to make a little extra money in a time where they normally go overseas. They're making their overseas contracts in America. They're not having to go overseas. They're playing in Miami. They're playing in front of a decent crowd. They're playing in a beautiful facility. And it's pretty dope. And it's having moments like Lisa Leslie is training Angel Reese. And you're having all these great, spectacular moments of the past connected with the present. And it's just been amazing. And I think the W is going to have to step it up. Plain and simple, you cannot allow Unrivaled to have all this stuff better than you, especially when the players put it together on their own. And you have backing of the NBA. You have backing of legit owners. You have backing of legit money. And the players put together TV contracts and facilities deals and sponsorships and money and a weekend and a location. And they just did all this stuff and travel and housing and childcare and all this stuff that they complain about in the WNBA. They went and did it themselves, which means it's possible. So therefore, you have to get this done if you're the WNBA, or Unrivaled may expand to 5v5 and you could be in trouble. Kind of thing, if you catch my drift, WNBA. Because if Unrivaled decides, hey, we don't need the WNBA at all, we're going to up our salaries to 200, 250, 300 a player to go 5v5, it could be interesting, to say the least. But that is all I have for the day. I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. I hope you guys enjoyed this show. Again, some of our shorter shows, the NBA doesn't have as many storylines as the NFL, but the NFL is only dead for a couple more weeks, and then it's back to the NFL offseason. But I hope you have a great rest of your day. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.